The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Job Search, Long Lines at the Unemployment Office Followed by Muted Business Activity Forced Recruiters to Lean on New Tools, Technology. The cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, A Market in Tatters. Even recruiters are scrambling as employment in North Carolina is hammered by the pandemic. And this is written by Cameron Snipes. Isabel Rocco graduated summa cum laude from NC State University on May 9 and was also armed with valuable internship experience. She had just one problem. There was no job to be found. In fact, the public relations major had been looking for full-time work since March, about the same time COVID-19 began wreaking havoc across the U.S. Rocco says she has seen many of her friends have full-time offers retracted. Others, she says, were supposed to start work in July, but had to push their start dates to January. Rocco, too, says she landed a summer internship in NC State's admissions office, but that offer was rescinded 3 weeks after she accepted. It's been extremely frustrating and humbling, Rocco says of her job search. This is certainly a hard time to be entering the job market. The COVID-19 fallout has caused a hard time for many, especially workers who have been laid off or furloughed because of it. And it's causing ripples, too, among recruiting firms looking to find new ways to help their clients and stay relevant amidst changing times. The end of April saw the highest unemployment rate in more than 70 years. Between March and April, the U.S. suffered the biggest monthly increase in unemployment as tracked by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1948. And misclassifications mean the rates could be even higher than reported. Even with an expected dip in the unemployment rate in May, which the BLS attributed to the resumption of business activities, the nation still neared Great Depression rates during the pandemic. And as the BLS noted, the May rate should have been about 16.3%, 3 percentage points higher than initially reported. And as Rocco knows, North Carolina is among the states feeling the most pain. A brutal few months. In a study released in late May, the Tar Heel State ranks number 11 among states with the highest increase in unemployment due to the coronavirus pandemic. The Advisor Smith ranking is based on the increase in unemployment rate from January to April, including both unemployment data and workers who have dropped out of the labor force. According to the study, North Carolina's unemployment rate increased 16% from January to April. The official North Carolina unemployment rate was 3.6% in January and rose to 12.2% in April. During that time, Advisor Smith reports the state's labor force participation rate declined by 5 percentage points from 61% in January to 56% in April. As of June 4, an unprecedented 40 million plus Americans had filed for unemployment across 11 weeks, and it's not over. A McKinsey Global Institute study from late April found that 57 million U.S. jobs were vulnerable. Even so, some of the laid-off or furloughed workers are content to settle for unemployment benefits, adding to the overall jobless number. The sudden volume of unemployed people drives many of the job seeker trends emerging today, says Ryan Carfley, president of Raleigh recruiting firm Personify. 3 months ago, with the unemployment rate at historic lows, you had quite a bit of mobility. Job seekers didn't see a significant penalty moving from one company to another. But amidst the pandemic, many people lucky enough to retain their jobs are unwilling to give up the internal equity built over time with their present employer to accept the risks associated with changing jobs. The silver lining among those who have seen their unemployment cut short is that a vast majority are temporary furloughs slated to be hired back. Life sciences flourishes. There has been a smattering of good economic development news across the triangle in recent weeks. Pharma giant Grifols announced it's pumping $351 million into expanding its Clayton campus and adding 300 jobs. Biotechnology firm Grail Incorporated announced its first foray into the Triangle with a $100 million investment and the prospect of nearly 400 jobs in Research Triangle Park. And medical technology company Adherix is planning to hire dozens of employees as it expands in Cary. All of those announcements were made earlier this month. There is one common denominator among those big announcements: life sciences. It's a burgeoning sector in the Triangle and one in which the area is well-versed, so it's no surprise many recruiters point to it as a major growth industry and one that is helping soften the blow of the pandemic locally. Life sciences and some parts of healthcare seem to be holding up well, says Craig Stone, president of Morrisville's Higher Networks. According to a report from CBRE released earlier this month, roughly 30% of the U.S. labor force works in industries expected to prove resilient amid the disruption caused by COVID-19 and related containment measures. And the Durham-Chapel Hill area lays claim to the highest percentage of resilient industries, such as healthcare, government and technology, 40.9%, in the country, the report says. Many of the markets with a combination of average or above average concentrations and higher volumes of resilient industries were some of the strongest local economies going into the COVID-19 crisis, the report says. This may help them be more resilient over the long term. Kelly Feist is a beneficiary of the Triangle's robust life sciences job market. In April, she was hired as managing director of the Americas region of ASCOM, a global healthcare and mobile workflow solutions provider. It's certainly an understatement when I share that it's been a challenge to assume the top regional leadership position at a healthcare technology company in the midst of a pandemic, Feist says. Though her new office is based in Morrisville, the pandemic has required that she start her new role remotely. Feist says remote work presents its challenges, such as not being able to meet her team in person, but adds that the virtual tools being used have made things easier for her to hit the ground running. Adding options. Many of the workers in the hardest-hit industries, such as hospitality, retail, and transportation, are not readily equipped to enter the still warm labor pools of the life sciences, healthcare, and technology sectors. But recruiters are seeing job seekers pivot and learn new skills to make themselves more marketable for those positions. Like every other economic crisis we've experienced, we see people returning to school or looking at areas to reskill in an attempt to change industries, says Carfley. For those job seekers willing to change careers, this pandemic provides a unique opportunity to develop specialized skills that are currently sought after. There's no way to mask the truth that the current employment landscape is extremely challenging, says Rod Frankel, president of Raleigh-based Frankel Staffing Partners. If we search thoroughly for a bright spot, it would be that certain specialized skills are still needed and employers are ready to offer positions to candidates who possess those skills. Some of those industries include healthcare, banking, finance, delivery drivers, and life sciences, particularly those firms working on vaccines, tests, and protective equipment. Flexibility is one of the biggest keys in the current employment landscape, recruiters say, both on the part of the job seeker and the employer. One thing this pandemic highlighted was the need and desire for flexibility, says Gary Green, president of Green Resources. Though maybe not ideal and certainly not without its hiccups, the transition to working remotely did happen relatively quickly in this country, and many companies were able to successfully adapt. Job seekers have taken notice and are looking for similar flexibility in future roles. This may take the form of flexible schedules, a remote work policy, or flexibility in how work is accomplished. Frankel says people looking for employment should be open in their job search and convey flexibility when seeking certain positions, including when determining hours and even wages. There's an openness to their job search efforts, he says. Job seekers are definitely required to demonstrate a strong degree of flexibility with regard to wages, functions, employment terms, and hours. Being flexible and catering to certain hot job pockets of growth is beneficial to recruiting firms as well. Recruiters scramble. Frankel says his secret to staying busy has been maintaining a wide variety of clients, adding that his 19-person firm has not had to downsize, furlough, or lay off any employees due to the pandemic. Our client base has always consisted of a large number of businesses from a wide variety of industries, Frankel says. Obviously, our strength in the life sciences arena has also helped us, as many of our clients are deeply involved in finding cures, tests, and vaccines for COVID-19. Brian Soper, president of KSB Consulting in Winston-Salem and Raleigh, says his firm's focus on the banking industry has, for the most part, insulated his firm from the COVID-19 fallout with Paycheck Protection Program loans to dole out. However, he notes that the current situation presents an entirely new set of circumstances that could dampen the outlook for months to come. It is a different climate, and there is a lot of volatility and uneasiness in the market, so my guess is it will be bumpy the rest of this year, Soper adds. Also, in the same way job seekers have had to adjust to the virtual world during this pandemic, including online networking and interviews, the survival of recruiting firms is dependent on how they can adapt to those changes. Talk about a cultural shift, Carfley of Personify says. No one we work with has been affected by COVID-19. Carfley says that since the pandemic hit, the firm has also implemented virtual career fairs, a first for the firm. We've done 10-plus of these in various parts of the country to assess various labor markets, he says. Personify has a nationwide scope and employs 115 people overall, including 85 in Raleigh. Diversity and inclusion. Another topic that is on the forefront of many minds is the issue of diversity and inclusion. Local recruiting firms say they are fielding more questions regarding the issue in the past few years, and many expect that number to grow. We have definitely been approached by clients over the last few years to be more intentional about racial diversity. We expect this trend to accelerate significantly given recent events, says Stone of Higher Networks. As a firm, we place a significant emphasis on recruiting qualified minority candidates. Our clients understand the value and diversity of people and ideas. An example can be found at Relias, a healthcare education company in Mooresville. It recently released a statement of commitment to drive change in support of racial equity. Among its intents are ensuring equitable compensation for employees of color, increasing the number of black employees, and investing in black entrepreneurship and black-owned businesses. At Relias, we realize that racial inequities are a barrier to achieving our mission of measurably improving the lives of the most vulnerable members of society and the people that care for them, CEO Kay Kraft says. The events over the last few weeks have driven us to further articulate our commitment to building a diverse and inclusive way of life where we work and in our community. Increasingly over the last few years, more and more RFPs, requests for proposals, include questions related to diversity and inclusion, Carfley says. And in the last year, I don't think any RFPs landed on my desk that didn't ask for help and support with D&I objectives and activities. For recent graduates, though, it's a tough time to be spilling into the job market. NC State's Rocco is working part-time at a boutique retail shop near her family home in Charlotte to hone her skills and make some money. But she says she still spends 4 to 5 hours a day searching and applying for full-time jobs. I did not expect the job search to be this hard, Rocco says, but I certainly understand why the process has been so slow. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Corporate interest in Triangle continues its robust drive. Communities around the country are concerned as the pandemic hurtles through the summer, but so far, the head of Wake County Economic Development says interest in the county remains pretty robust. Executive Director Michael Haley says as of June 11, there are 41 active projects representing 9,547 jobs and $1 billion in capital investment. An active project is either a company looking to move to the county or expand here. In June 2019, those numbers were 45 active jobs, 12,288 potential jobs, and $1.7 billion in capital investment. Haley says that some projects have delayed their timelines, but notes that none have dropped out. The important takeaway is, has there been an impact? Yes, there has, but our pipeline has remained strong, he says. The pandemic has raised questions about whether companies might leave more dense areas, such as New York City, and will workers, once allowed to work from anywhere, prefer moderately priced areas to expensive regions such as San Francisco? Haley says deciphering long-term trends is still difficult now, but he notes, it's been interesting. What we've been seeing in March and April is we've seen an increase in companies from California that are looking into the marketplace. Here's one suggestion for Haley from Biz, especially if our economic developers really want to quantify the interest. Check with owners of all apartment communities in the Triangle area and ask them about the new leases. Where are they coming from? Why are they signing leases during the pandemic? Are they moving with a business or are they starting their own business? Answers to those questions could add some clarity relating to our growth. Federal government gives some homeowners a break. Some homeowners are getting an extension thanks to the U.S. government. The Federal Housing Administration has announced a two-month extension of its foreclosure and eviction moratorium through August 31 for homeowners with FHA, insured single-family mortgages. The extension directs mortgage servicers to halt any new foreclosure actions and suspend foreclosure actions in process and cease all evictions from FHA, insured single-family properties. Homeowners should continue to pay as they are able or seek forbearance pursuant to the Coronavirus Relief and Economic Security Act. Acting Federal Housing Commissioner Lynn Wolfson notes that the FHA is committed to working with borrowers and the extension, quote, is another sign of the unprecedented steps HUD is taking to assist those impacted by this terrible pandemic, unquote. Income hit high among people of color in North Carolina. The impact of the pandemic and the recession that followed has been an especially tough blow on people of color, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau Household Pulse Survey. Numbers collected the week of May 21 through 26 and published June 3 provide a snapshot of the state's 8 million people age 18 and above. The survey details how many have suffered a loss of employment income or another adult in their household has lost employment income. Since March 13, according to the numbers, of 5.3 million whites, 2.1 million suffered an income loss, 39.6%. Of 1.7 million blacks, 900,000 suffered a loss, 52.9%. And of 649,000 Hispanics, 331,000 suffered a loss, 51%. The economic losses have hit men slightly more than women. Of the state's 3.8 million men in that age group, 1.7 million had a loss of employment income since March 13, 44.7%. Of the 4.2 million women, 1.8 million suffered a loss, 42.8%. Moore Square Market now open in downtown Raleigh. A few glimpses of normalcy are starting to return. On June 17, the Moore Square Market hosted its first weekly event since the shutdown began. The Raleigh Market will be open weekly from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. until October 28. This year, the market will feature up to six local restaurants and retailers, with the first week featuring Bad Cat Coffee, Chini Chai and Coffee and Tiffin, Marbles Kids Museum, and Munjo Munjo. Businesses will rotate each week. The market has proven to be highly popular in the year's warmer months. The music hasn't died, it's just moving online. A popular Carrboro music venue is taking its act online. The Cat's Cradle, which has been around for half a century, has had to cancel or postpone performances at its 750-person venue. So, June 5, owner Frank Heath tried a live stream of an Allman Brothers tribute band and was pleasantly surprised by the results. He had more than 6,500 people check into the performance, according to Facebook. While some of the check-ins were brief, it was enough interest to spark more performances. "We will definitely try to have more," he says. "Everyone had a good time and felt like things went well." The Cat's Cradle held a second virtual event June 14 and has more in the works, including a jazz performance June 26 with Crystal Bright and the Silver Hands. And finally, Wilmington Company targets Triangle for new retirement centers. A senior living company based in Wilmington is rapidly growing its presence in the Triangle as part of its expansion around the region. On June 2nd, Liberty Senior Living moved its first residents into the Templeton of Cary, a continuing care retirement community. Liberty Senior Living has 12 retirement communities across the Carolinas and Tennessee and will add one in Raleigh. The Raleigh development will go on to part of the land where the Country Club apartments are now located, adjacent to the recently renamed Daniels Middle School. That project is likely to break ground in 2021. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Commercial sales plummet across Triangle. Commercial sales volume in the Triangle plummeted in April and May as buyers hit the brakes amid the pandemic. Across the Triangle, the first 2 months of Q2 saw just $264 million in commercial sales, according to data from Real Capital Analytics. That's down from $1.6 billion in Q1. To catch up, June would have to see more than $1.3 billion in sales by the end of the month. But local experts say the return to pre-pandemic sales levels will likely take months and possibly years. When COVID-19 happened, a lot of buyers kind of went to the sidelines, says Blake Thomas, vice president of capital markets at Avis & Young in Raleigh. There were questions about who was paying rent, questions around the debt markets, the ability to do due diligence, and frankly, a lot of folks turned to the asset management side of things, triaging their portfolios. In Wake County alone, month-by-month data shows a significant drop-off in sales activity in April and into May following a banner first quarter. The country kicked off the new year with 518.9 million dollars in commercial real estate sales in January, followed by 230.6 million dollars in February and 209.1 million dollars in March, according to county data. That all changed in April when commercial sales sank to just 32.5 million dollars. Data from May 1 to May 20 list just $10.2 million in commercial sales. One of the factors fueling the drop is a disconnect between buyers looking for a deal amid the crisis and sellers confident in the long-term value of their properties. There's a lot of capital and a lot of buyers who think they can buy opportunistically, says Marcus Jackson, principal capital markets at Avis & Young in Raleigh. Buyers have often wanted 15 or 20% discounts, and sellers in the Triangle have not been willing to give any. Duke launching new RTP campus to focus on vaccines and infectious diseases. Duke University is establishing a new campus in Research Triangle Park dedicated to faculty work on vaccines and infectious disease as hundreds of millions in new funding pours in for research. Currently called the Duke RTP campus, the project will be an expansion of the Duke University School of Medicine and will host 200 to 250 faculty members and researchers. It will be situated in Palmer RTP. Earlier this year, the university leased 275,000 square feet of office and laboratory space at 29 Palmer Way, 27 Palmer Way, and Node 2, which is connected to Palmer 27. Altogether, the new campus will cost over $100 million. Scott Selig, Associate Vice President of Capital Assets and Real Estate for Duke, says a main driver of the expansion was the recent funding and growth of the Duke Human Vaccine Institute, led by Chief Operating Officer Thomas Denny. The institute recently landed three contracts with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases for the development, manufacture, and clinical testing of a more universally applicable flu vaccine. That funding will equal $500 million to $520 million over the next 7 years, Denny says. Denny says the new campus will be a place of collaboration for researchers across the university. It's not just an expansion of the Duke Human Vaccine Institute. It's an expansion for the School of Medicine that brings in new people, he says. Some will be in immunology, School of Surgery. It's going to be a School of Medicine facility. This is set to begin next year as Duke works to renovate the buildings to meet the team's needs in time for a January start. The new faculty moving into the space will come in waves, with the first moving in next January. Plans filed for massive iceplex in Holly Springs. Plans are in the works for a huge sports complex in Holly Springs with an initial estimated cost of up to $90 million. A Carey Group is looking to build a massive indoor sports complex with a focus on ice sports in a proposed mixed-use destination. Calvert Sports Academy and Development Center has filed plans for the Calvert Sports Academy, calling for a 272,000-square-foot complex. The company is led by Calvert Holdings Executive Chairman and Founder, Russ McLaughlin, and Clark Nexon of Virginia Beach, Virginia, is the project's architect and engineer. The project is situated on 12 acres in the proposed Carolina Springs mixed-use destination. At a town meeting in April of last year, the company presented a vision for a sports complex dedicated to ice sports and a special focus on competitive sports, with hockey as a main driver. Architectural design firm picks Raleigh for a new office. An architectural design firm with a history of triangle work has picked Raleigh for its first office outside Boston and Baltimore. CI Design, that's spelled C-I, is currently operating a two-person team out of a Nest co-working space in downtown Raleigh as it seeks a permanent space with room to grow. The firm is currently involved with developments in North Hills and Chapel Hill. In North Hills, the company is working on Kane Realty's redevelopment of the JCPenney site. In Chapel Hill, the company is working with Trinzic Residential Group on the Aura, a 500,000-square-foot multifamily and mixed-use development. C-Design principal Chris Bauer says the company was in the middle of launching the Raleigh office when the pandemic hit, temporarily delaying the process. As the projects gear up and move along, we're hoping to grow that office pretty quick, Bauer says. Raleigh developer plans new apartments. A local developer is looking to bring a new apartment community to Durham in a growing area north of the city. Raleigh-based Level 5 Ventures filed plans in April for the Summer Meadows Apartments, an 83-unit multifamily community calling for three-story buildings and space for a future phase of development. The project is situated on 5.5 acres at 433 Hebron Road near a collection of other multifamily communities north of the city of Durham. Site plans also label an adjacent lot entitled for an additional 15,600 square feet of impervious area in a future phase of development. Filings with the county didn't specify what that might be. And finally, in a section called Big Numbers, $120,000, the amount paid for the property by Entrust Carolina back in 2010, and $111,700, the square feet of multifamily space, and the Level 5 Ventures website lists the project cost at $17 million. And now we turn to Seth Thomas Gulledge's page on healthcare. Biopharma startup adds cash, plans for growth. A pharmaceutical company has just closed on $118 million in new financing, part of which will go toward expanding its Triangle operations. Austin, Texas-based Shattuck Labs announced June 15 the closing of its $118 million Series B equity financing, which included funding from Durham-based Hatteras Venture Partners. Shattuck maintains offices in both Austin and Research Triangle Park, but lists Austin as its headquarters in filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The company is developing treatments for cancers and autoimmune diseases. It works with what are known as fusion proteins and is developing what it calls agonist redirected checkpoints, or ARCs, drugs that can suppress parts of the immune system while activating others. Josiah Hornblower, co-founder and executive chairman of Shattuck, did not disclose how many people the company might hire in Durham, but says the firm anticipates growing headcount in both Austin and the Triangle. He also says Shattuck Labs would consider increasing its footprint in both regions as well, including possibly expanding its facility in RTP. Given that we could, within a year, be running four different clinical trials, we will need to scale our organization proportionally, Hornblower says. We're looking to expand both our Austin location, and we have already committed to expanding our North Carolina campus. The company has 50 full-time employees, most of which are based in the Triangle. In 2017, Durham-based Heat Biologics said its former chief scientific officer, Dr. Taylor Schriever, would be leaving to co-found Shattuck, where he would be, quote, developing technology exclusively licensed from Heat, unquote. Schriever now serves as the CEO of Shattuck. At the time Schriever left, Heat Biologics CEO Jeff Wolf said, Heat has the potential to benefit from the success of Shattuck through milestone and royalty payments as they advance their product candidates. But on June 15, a representative for Heat Biologics said the company currently cannot comment on the relationship between Heat and Shattuck. Psychiatric effort to be led by UNC researchers. Researchers at UNC Chapel Hill will lead a $26.9 million research project to create better therapeutics for psychiatric conditions such as anxiety, depression, and addiction. The university announced a research team led by Dr. Brian Roth, a professor of pharmacology at the UNC School of Medicine, has been awarded a four-year award from the Federal Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. The funding will be used to create new medicines to treat psychiatric conditions. The goal is to find medicines that are fast-acting and lack serious side effects. Rapidly acting drugs with antidepressant, anti-anxiety, and anti-addictive potential devoid of disabling side effects do not exist, not even as experimental compounds for use in animals, Roth said in a statement. Creating such compounds would change the way we treat millions of people around the world suffering from these serious and life-threatening conditions. These jobs are in high demand, a good sign for the Triangle. A new report analyzing job growth across the U.S. demonstrates that research and development is in high demand, meaning the Triangle's robust industry could be a sliver of light in the recession. According to research conducted by Randstad, a global talent advisory firm, pharmaceutical research and development jobs nationally saw the least impact compared to sectors such as sales, customer service, finance, or even software development. The report relies on a national analysis of new job postings across various industries, as well as data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics in an effort to create a predictive look at how companies are looking at hiring amid the pandemic. According to that analysis, during the period between March and April, job postings related to pharmaceutical R&D dropped only 17%, the smallest drop of any industry analyzed in the report. Not shocking and not surprising was the fact that the pharma industry was the industry that really stood out as having the least impact, says Sue Marcus, regional president for Randstad SourceRight North America. By current count, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is overseeing more than 130 clinical trials related to COVID-19 therapeutics or vaccine efforts. The fact that those efforts are translating into increased job security and an uptick in hiring of certain subspecialties is good news for the state. The Triangle has become a stronghold for the clinical trials industry, with more than 151 CROs employing more than 24,000 workers here. According to Randstad's analysis of North Carolina, there are currently 46,215 sales jobs postings, 14,752 software development postings, 8,660 customer service jobs, 8,627 finance jobs, 8,600 engineering postings, and 177 strictly pharmaceutical jobs. And along with that article, there's a listing of big numbers, 75,000. The number of North Carolinians with jobs in life sciences, the average annual salary is $91,000. The region is called home to more than 735 life sciences companies. And 46%. The increase in demand for clinical trials research associates and clinical trials managers between March and April 2020. Durham firm seeks healthy and strong balance with acquisitions. Despite global uncertainty caused by the pandemic, a clinical site company in Durham has tagged two more acquisitions to bolster its national network. Velocity Clinical Research announced June 15 the acquisition of Omega Medical Research in Providence, Rhode Island, and Binac Clinical Research in Valparaiso, Indiana. Velocity launched in the Triangle in 2019 with a strategy of acquiring research sites for clinical trials throughout the country. Now, just over a year later, the latest acquisitions expand the company's footprint to 12 research sites across 9 states. Paul Evans, Velocity CEO and a former Quintiles executive, says the pandemic has actually reinforced the company's business model, designed to form a network of dedicated research sites, meaning its sites are less affected than medical centers. What we've learned throughout this whole COVID crisis is that the model of research sites that Velocity is putting together is a pretty robust model, and there's a strong business argument for it, he says. And next to this article, there's a quote from Paul Evans, Velocity CEO. It's certainly true that it's been a tricky time for research sites, and there are quite a few that are finding this period very hard. And finally, we have a section called She Said It with a quote from Dr. Ella Grock, Wake Research's president and CEO, on the massive pipeline of COVID-related clinical trial opportunities in the market. I feel this is a moral obligation, but we also have a moral obligation to do something that falls in the scope of our expertise. I don't think that centers should feel better because of moral obligation and run to take on all 80 or whatever COVID clinical trials and then not to deliver any results or enroll patients, because that actually is going to slow down the approval of a very important drug. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Restaurants and Retail, written by Dathan Kazuk. Triangle Breweries emphasize workplace culture after local allegations. In the wake of allegations of workplace harassment at Raleigh's brewery Bavana, other Triangle breweries say there must be renewed emphasis on fostering a safe environment for employees. Co-owner Vansana Nolintha stepped down from his roles with Brewery Bavana and Bita Manda after harassment claims. One of the first local breweries to issue a statement against harassment in the workplace was Raleigh's Trophy Brewing Company. In a social media post June 9, the brewery said, "This week's serious and heartbreaking allegations of abuse and harassment in our local restaurant brewery community have surfaced. We as a company feel the need to address them." The brewery said it would have all members of its management team undergo training with Capital Associated Industries in Raleigh. The brewery also plans to update its employee handbook. In Durham, Full Steam Brewery owner Sean Lilly Wilson says, "Full Steam proactively addresses the topic of sexual harassment in our employee handbook, onboarding, and in staff training. Our HR department treats our employee handbook as a living document because we continue to learn and adapt as we discover ways to improve our policies." The latest edition of its employee handbook includes policies and guidelines on dating in the workplace. Tom Simon, head of marketing at Lone Rider Brewing Company, knows problems with harassment in the workplace only add to the current unrest. "As a company, we have worked to address these challenges both internally as well as to provide assistance externally," Simon says. "We are navigating the COVID epidemic. We continue to support and will always support Black Lives Matter. The abuse allegations that have come out recently from a neighboring brewery are extremely unsettling and something we do not take lightly." Jeremy Bond, co-founder of Carey's Bond Brothers Beer Company, notes that, "You can't lead the people if you don't love the people." In a statement, the brewery said, "As business owners in Cary, we know we have been given an opportunity to lead and build a community. In response to this and in light of the current state of our community, we have begun working with local nonprofits to raise money to help educate and combat both racial injustice and sexual abuse in the workplace." The North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild says it is essential to ensure its members provide a safe place to work. "We provide an education to our brewery members, not just technical about hops and such, but also business, diversity, and HR training," Executive Director Rich Green says. As far as the allegations at Brewery Bavana, he says the company is taking the right steps in addressing the issues, and the people being brought to light have stepped down. "They have hired a third party to investigate, and they should be commended for that," Green says. Stir Raleigh reopens, offers some new items. The restaurant Stir, which is located inside Raleigh's North Hill Shopping Center, reopened June 18 with a few new changes for its guests. The biggest change is Stir has brought in Heather Miro as its executive chef. Miro brings experience working for Disney as well as Yard House and Seasons 52 in Raleigh. "Stir is a great fit for my background," says Miro. "I am eager to mentor my team and cultivate their passion for the art of cooking." A few new menu items include a new variations of its poke bowl, as well as new steak options and more classic cocktails. The restaurant will still be available for pickup and delivery. And there's a quote along with the article from Chris Brett, general manager of Stir. "We've been busy making enhancements to the restaurant, and we can't wait to share them with our guests." And finally, on this page, we have a question and answer column. Triangle caterers see sales plummet as events delayed. North Carolina bars and taverns aren't the only ones struggling during the pandemic. Local area caterers are also seeing their dollars and events depleted. Since mid-March, two of the largest caterers in the Triangle have seen roughly $5.6 million in losses, as well as 2,300 events go down the tubes. Now, Catering Works and Rocky Top Catering are eager for life to return to normal. "How many events have you lost since March?" Catering Works: "We have lost 2,100 deliveries. We do about 150 per week, 22 events per week during this spring and summer season." Rocky Top Catering: 213 events have been canceled or postponed to date. "How many employees have you had to lay off or put on furlough?" Catering Works: "As of today, June 12th, 125. Rocky Top Catering: "Initially, we furloughed 25 salaried and all hourly employees, totaling 200 plus. When we received the PPP, we were able to bring back all salaried employees and 60 hourly employees who he guaranteed 30 to 40 hours a week. Did you lose any food during this time or donate any to organizations? Catering works. We donated what we could. A lot of our regular places would not accept food donations. Rocky Top Catering. We lost $15,400 in product that was purchased or prepped for events the week of March 10. We chose not to dive into the delivery and grocery business. Is there a point you worry you might lose your business? Catering works. We have not had a good night's sleep since March 1. We are not giving up. Rocky Top Catering. There is always a point, but we will likely survive. We are hopeful that our government leadership will come to the realization that this isn't going away and that we have to adapt and learn to live with this safely and responsibly. What does the general public need to know? Rocky Top Catering. Social distance. There is no coincidence in the spike in cases we are seeing. If we want to go about our lives, we must comply with the health and safety guidelines, or we're not going to get anywhere. Now we turn to the On Business page, written by Mattias Miller. NC film industry's reboot slowed by COVID-19. The North Carolina Film Office remains hopeful for a strong end-of-year finish despite massive industry-wide delays caused by the novel coronavirus pandemic. Five television series and feature-length films delayed production in North Carolina. Now many of those productions are eyeing a July 1 start date, but the approaching hurricane season and the possibility of a second wave of outbreaks has created lingering uncertainty. According to Guy Gaster, head of the film office, a total of 32 projects filed to film in North Carolina could generate more than 1,000 crew hires, 614 talent opportunities, and about 3,400 extra opportunities as long as production can resume. His office is projecting this could bring $79.5 million in direct in-state spending. It's starting to be a very positive year. I do think we will have a strong finish in the fall, Gaster said during a meeting of the Governor's Advisory Council on Film recently. Inasmuch as there is not a big second wave, I think we might eclipse last year's five-year high. Spyglass Media Group recently announced it will film the next Scream sequel in Wilmington. Last fall, Jamie Lee Curtis was in Wilmington to film Halloween Kills, which comes out later this year. Production companies are still waiting for Governor Roy Cooper and the State Department of Health and Human Services to sign off on industry safety white papers. Key guilds and film associations must also agree before major production companies can restart filming. Gaster said it's likely individual production companies will also have their own safety policies as production resumes. If production is able to resume July 1, $31 million will be added to the North Carolina Film and Entertainment Grant. As of now, potential projects could request as much as $55 million in grants, which would lead to $220 million in in-state spending. And finally, damaged businesses get online support. Small businesses in downtown Raleigh that suffered damage during the May 30 riots are getting a big lift through online fundraising. While business owners wade through the insurance process, some are seeing thousands of dollars raised through online fundraising platforms. Yvette Hunt's salon, Yvette's Beauty Salon on South Wilmington Street, had been reopened for 1 week when she closed shop in anticipation of the protests on May 30. Her shop was destroyed overnight. Most of her equipment was broken or stolen, and the windows were shattered. The initial shock of walking into the shop and seeing, this is where I work, this is my livelihood, this is how I make my income, this is the only thing I do for work, Hunt says. The damages and losses were estimated at $3,500. It was her daughter's idea to start a GoFundMe campaign. Hunt said she received more than $2,000 within the first hour of the campaign, and the campaign raised more than $14,000. The goal was $10,000. I was so overwhelmed I didn't even know how to accept it, Hunt says. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we have an article written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. Concerns rise about nonprofit support as pandemic stretches further. The COVID-19 era has created challenges across the globe with the parallel crisis of a public health disaster coupled with an economic shock. That unfortunate pairing also creates another contradictory problem. During a period of high need for donations and goodwill, economic certainty and even personal freedom has seldom been so limited. That could have dramatic repercussions across the philanthropic world. For those that rely on government grants, worries ensue that direct government spending on pandemic response could leave bare the coffers nonprofits often rely on. For those that rely on corporate giving, boardroom discussions about limiting expenses in the face of declining revenue mean donations could drop. And even those that rely on volunteers worry that the need for social distancing and the reduced financial health of the volunteer base could mean less hands available. And even after the pandemic, the world will continue to face societal issues that charities and nonprofits were formed to address long before COVID-19. With the economic impact affecting businesses, I worry about their giving starting to constrict because they're being constricted and philanthropy is one of the first things to go, says Lori O'Keefe, the president and CEO of the Triangle Community Foundation. So far, O'Keefe says that many other charities and philanthropies are continuing to see contributions coming in, especially those in the human services space, for now. I think that they're also very, very concerned that many of them receive public governmental support and that money isn't going to be there, she says, noting typically private philanthropy doesn't fill those gaps. In May, she says, they started to see some donor-advised funds begin to slow down contributions alongside the uncertainty of the markets. But what we're seeing on the grant-making side is that donors are remaining very active, O'Keefe says. What will be interesting to watch is how that trend continues or doesn't the longer this goes on. But regardless of the economic outlook, some companies still believe giving is of paramount importance. At the U.S. headquarters of Chaisi and Carey, for example, company officials say the pandemic is making clear the importance of community support. As an organization, we quickly realized in the early weeks of the COVID-19 impact that $50,000 wouldn't be nearly enough for our local partners, says John Zwinski, the company's senior vice president, business unit. We came back and we found funding elsewhere that we hadn't really had a budget for in 2020 and contributed an extra $135,000. That funding went to charities such as Interfaith Food Shuttle, Children's Flight of Hope, and Refugee Hope Partners, all of which are vital to Chaisi's goal of improving communities. Asked how the company weighed its decisions to move then to more than triple its intended giving in the face of economic uncertainty, Zwinski points to the company's registration as a public benefit corporation, which makes certain philanthropic outcomes as expressly stated in its business model, as its shareholders, and internal company culture as key. We certainly knew from the beginning of this that we would have a negative financial impact, or at least some negative financial impact to our business in 2020, he says. But when a company takes the long-term view, and the long-term view includes making a positive impact on the community and our society as a whole, it's really easy to not only stay the course, but even step up where needed. To people such as O'Keefe, finding ways to encourage givers to step up is critical for the months ahead. We know that charity isn't going to rescue all organizations or solve all the problems, she says. But I think continuing to make investments into our community is the way our whole community and economy recovers. And now we turn to the nonprofit news. Company gives out bonuses to employees. A national landscaping company with a Triangle presence has given out $470,000 in bonuses to employees to thank them for their work during the pandemic. Rupert Landscape, which is based in Maryland, gave the bonuses to 1,100 of its 1,700 employees, with a focus on those on the front lines. Rupert has 330 workers in North Carolina, based in Raleigh and Charlotte. When we first began discussing this, our primary concern was our obligation to ensure the company's solid financial standing both now and into the future so that our employees can feed their families and meet their needs, said Rupert President Phil Key. Like many businesses, we have experienced contract cancellations, scope reductions, and various other pressures that have affected and will continue to affect our revenue. But because of the hard work of our team over many years, we had funds available that we felt would not put our financial stability at risk and knew that investing in our team would pay dividends in our long-term success. North Carolina Arts Council spread support. North Carolina's artistic community has been slammed by the pandemic, and the North Carolina Arts Council is looking to help out. The Arts Council is giving out $105,000 in grants to seven nonprofits to help mitigate the impact of the pandemic. Artists across our state were among the first to feel the impact of COVID-19 and continue to experience the effects, says Wayne Martin, executive director of the Arts Council. Artists connect us and invigorate our communities. We need to support artists to keep our state's creative economy strong. Funding came from the private sector and from federal funds through the National Endowment for the Arts. The North Carolina Arts Foundation, which supports the work of the North Carolina Arts Council, distributed $40,000 in contributions raised during Under One Roof, a three-night online concert in May that featured North Carolina musicians. The nonprofits receiving grants will match the awards. Receiving funding were VAE North Carolina Artist Relief Fund Raleigh, $25,000. Arts and Science Council, Charlotte-Mecklenburg County, $15,000. Arts Greensboro, $15,000. Durham Arts Council, also $15,000. North Star Church of the Arts in Durham, $15,000. Orange County Arts Commission, Hillsboro, $15,000. And Pitt County's Arts Council at Emerge, Greenville, $5,000. Harris Teeter looks to help troops by aiding USO. Harris Teeter is inviting shoppers to support the USO. Through July 28, shoppers can round up their transaction to the nearest whole dollar at checkout, with 100% of funds donated to USO locations throughout Harris Teeter's areas. Harris Teeter shoppers can donate in-store at traditional and self-checkout registers. The USO acts as an extended family for the military by delivering programs and services through more than 250 locations worldwide. And finally, five Triangle students awarded scholarships. Five students from the Triangle have been awarded scholarships to participate in the Fund for American Studies Virtual Summer. Selected from UNC Chapel Hill were Brittany Broom, Aaron Sugarman, Sherman Witcher, and Brent Van Vliet. Selected from Campbell University was Joshua Davis. The scholarships are provided by Louis DeJoy and his wife, Dr. Aldona Wass. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Lack of Money Flow Transparency Would Thwart Small Business Recovery. Just a few days ago, a frighteningly ominous report was presented by a professor from the University of California, Santa Cruz, who looked into the effect of COVID-19 on businesses across different sectors. Robert Fairley, an economics professor, studied numbers from the April 2020 current population survey and concluded that the number of active business owners in the U.S. fell by 3.3 million, or 22%, between February and April. Fairley says it was the largest on record and losses were felt in nearly all industries. Among the industries that hurt the most during April were the arts, leisure, and hotels. 35% of businesses closed, construction, 27% of businesses closed, and the repair and maintenance industry, 25% of the businesses closed. Shutdowns and lockdowns across most states during April were the primary cause of the closures. If the U.S. economy has any chance of making a quick recovery, one simply has to look into Fairley's report and match it with the flow of hundreds of billions of dollars in federal assistance. Between the Federal Reserve's Main Street Lending Initiative, the U.S. Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, EIDL, the supermajority of American businesses could tap into the federal assistance pipeline to see them through COVID-19, at least in theory. But the problem is no one really knows where the money is going because much of the paperwork is not being disclosed by federal agencies. In recent days, S&P Global did an interesting analysis that concluded PPP money may not have gone to areas that needed it the most. For example, Nevada, which had a 23% increase in unemployment, is 50th in terms of the share of PPP money. Michigan, with a 21% increase in unemployment, was ranked 46th in terms of the share of PPP money. Conversely, Florida and Nebraska, which had only 5% increases in unemployment rates, were ranked 7th and 5th in terms of PPP share. That's far from a good sign for a recovering economy. We now know black-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, and Latinx firms are going out of business at a much faster rate than businesses run by white individuals. Fairley estimates 41% of black businesses were closed in April, and 32% of Latinx firms hung out their "we're closed" signs. In comparison, 17% of white-owned businesses closed their doors during the month. Granted, these numbers are before the PPP and EIDL money started flowing to these businesses, so there's a good chance many of these businesses reopened or individuals started a brand new business with a clean slate. We have to wait on the May and June numbers to determine if the rebound is temporary or these firms are getting some wind under their wings. If information of the federal assistance were made public, it would be easier for federal, state, and local municipalities to fine-tune their assistance programs moving forward. There are some encouraging signs that show people have been eager to spend their stimulus money and their unemployment checks. Retail sales in May jumped 18%, signifying the reopening of malls, restaurants, and boutique shops is helping commerce. With this many business closures, it also means that the companies that survive will get stronger because of less competition. That may be good for the business, but it is not good for the labor market. The fiscal strength of a few companies who may hire more workers will not be sufficient enough to erase the deficit of workers losing their jobs because of business closures. We need data to make wise decisions. Transparency of where the billions in federal assistance went will help forward the cause. And we'll read as much as we can of the Sound Advice column written by Edward Marshall, who is a former business owner for 4 decades and now an adjunct professor who teaches leadership at Duke University. The headline, "Take Care of Your People and the Economy Will Follow." As states reopen and we give the virus more fuel, all bets are off. I understand the reasons for reopening the economy, but I've said before, if you don't solve the biology, the economy won't recover. That's a quote from Dr. Aaron Bromage, infectious disease expert, University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. A business leader was overheard saying, "I have this office building I'm paying for and no one is in it. I need to fill it up to make it worth it. We can and must reopen now." But wait, Facebook and Google just told their thousands of workers they can work from home forever, and they certainly have lots of buildings. Workers, on the other hand, are afraid of losing their jobs if they don't go back to work. They have to calculate whether they want to risk losing their jobs or take the risk and potentially lose their lives. It's an unholy choice, the modern version of your money or your life. But it's a calculus business leaders and workers alike must make as reopening continues in spite of the fact that there are now over 2 million Americans infected and more than 115,000 have died. For business leaders... Oh, and actually, we're going to have to stop there. The article goes on to mention how the companies need to look after the health of their workers if they want to survive and be productive. And we have run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and as special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.